Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listening to me because they're out of touch with reality and the Republican Party. We are the party of Abraham Lincoln.
Come on, baby, let the good time roll. Come on, baby, let me thrill your soul. Come on, baby, let the good
time
roll.
Yeah, John, go for it. Bring back Lincoln. Yeah, run Lincoln for the presidency.
Come on, baby,
just what the doctor ordered. A corpse. It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. Come on, play it loud. They're bored to death. They're frightened. They can't afford rice. They can't buy bread. They're on bread lines. They can't buy gas. Sky is falling. We're going to roast to death. We're going to get hit with incoming missiles. Any day, the world's coming to an end. God. Hysterical media, huh? Keep peddling the newspaper. Keep peddling the internet. Keep peddling the failing. You shut that off already. They can't hear a word I'm saying. They can't multitask. What do you think they are, under 93? Now, who is out of touch with reality? Play the opening with John McCann again.
They're not just listening to me because they're out of touch with reality and the Republican Party. We are the party.
Right, now play, who's out of touch with reality? Play Yakety Yak by the Coasters so I can get ready to do the show on the Savage
Take
Nation.
Take out the papers and the trash. Or you don't get no cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen first.
Yeah.
You ain't gonna rock and roll no more.
Yak.
Just finish cleaning
Don't talk back
room.
To the Republican Party, or you'll wind
Let's
up on radio.
Get all that garbage outside.
You'll never be a politician, son.
Or you don't go out Friday night. Yakety yak.
Don't talk back.
You just put on your coat and hat and walk yourself to the laundromat. And when you finish doing that, put out the cat.
Where is Benny Hill now that we need him? There are no comedians left. They're all sourpuss failed talk show hosts. Get that off the show. Turn it right off. Maybe we could play something in Ladino right now. Is there any kind of music in Ladino or Esperanto? Because the stories themselves, if I start to deal with them, we're finished. Right down the toilet. If I start in with the Sean Bell case... You know, I saw that's a terrible tragedy, the verdict in the Sean Bell shooting case. No question about it. There's no winners here, no losers. The guy is dead. To me, looking from the outside, and I wasn't there, there was panic on both parts. The police panicked, and Sean Bell and his friends panicked, probably thinking the undercover cops were gangbangers looking to get him. It was an absolute mayhem. And, you can't blame anybody here. That's the terrible thing. But, of course, that didn't stop the Reverend Professor Alan Sharpton from marching. I realize he took time out from his important meteorological studies in his laboratory. You do know that Al Sharpton is no longer a street rebel, a street rabble-rouser, rather. He has become, because of the money from Al Gore and his expertise in hanging around with Newt Gingrich, he is now a meteorological professor running a laboratory somewhere in New York City, I understand. He had to take time out from his important research on global warming to walk in the streets and listen to clip one. Let's listen to what he had to say.
When a judge sits on a bench and says that he...
Turn him off. I had enough of him. I don't know about you. I've had enough of him for 12 lifetimes. You know, you got to understand something. One thing about Obama is he's not Al Sharpton. At least Obama is the next generation. These street hustlers is enough already. Obama's a great speaker. And he's quite, the word I'm looking for is, I would almost say ambassadorial. He's ready for an ambassador's post. I don't know if anyone has said that yet. Obama needs to be seasoned a little. This guy could be the president in a number of elections from now, but they should give him an ambassadorial post for a while. He goes abroad. He learns how to put the cutlery on the table. He learns how to bow and scrape, and he gets some foreign experience. And then he could come back and run. Speaking of running, I bicycled down to the mall today before the show, way hours ago. One of the things I have to do is I have to see Life 101 every day, or I really am disconnected from reality like John McCain. God forbid I would be like George Bush if I didn't do it. I wouldn't know. Well, there is a slight downturn. God, it's like his father. Well, that's a supermarket checkout. Golly, gee whiz, look at that. They have checkers. Woo. So, anyway, I go to the mall. I don't talk with anyone, but I look. And mainly at that time of the day, it's women and children, which is fun to watch to see how people behave with their children. I love to see children running around. So I see, boom, boom, my luck, talk about out-of-touch reality, a woman with a large straw hat and a handsome little boy, I don't know, 2 years old, running around without shoes. So naturally, I have a thought on running around without shoes. Remember, we had a filmmaker on the show about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, who told the tragic story of his adult son who was working in a nightclub and stepped on a splinter and wound up with blood poisoning weeks later and then almost died from cardiomyopathy, etc. I mean, you don't let your children walk around barefoot. Okay, but here's the woman, straw hat, and I mean a big straw hat. I don't mean a straw hat. I'm talking hippie straw hat. Now, she wasn't exactly a hippie, but she did have a tiny nose stud, which was the giveaway of what was coming. But I couldn't resist going up to her because I wasn't concerned about it. I knew I was going to get a verbal slap in the face for it, if not worse. But I was concerned about her child. When you have a mother like this that's so out of touch with reality, you have to step in as a stranger. I knew what was coming. I roll my bike up and I say, "Pardon me, ma'am, but I had a friend who stepped on a splinter and wound up with blood poisoning." Wow. Oh, I don't have to tell you what she said to me. So I said, "Excuse me for bothering you." I said, "Pardon me for bothering you." I said, "But sometimes reality has a way of ruining your day." You know, I had to give her a little parting shot, and I rolled away. Now, you look at a woman like this letting her child run wild at an outdoor shopping center without shoes, and you know she's an Obama or a Hillary voter. You know that immediately. You know that by the nose ring, and not a nose ring, by the nose stud, she is advertising that she is a wise person, that is a libertine, unrestrained by conventional morality, and she's leading a life unto herself. Whatever she wants to do, she'll do, irregardless of what effect it may have upon her. Society be damned, and no man with a gray beard is going to tell her anything because she knows everything. After all, didn't the nose stud indicate that she was all-knowing? So you say to yourself, how can a society survive with so many millions of nose-studded know-nothings like this? The answer is it isn't surviving. And that's why I say we should play a little Rock and Roll Friday on Rock and Roll Friday. Now, we got Rama Lama Ding Dang, Ding Dong by the Etzels, Mr. Lee by the Bobettes. Play Mr. Lee, 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3, hey! Look at Mr. Lee, 3, 4, 5, hey! Look at him jive, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee. Hop, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee.
The guys were cool in those days, tighter pants. No one gelled their hair like a idiot in a circus. The peak in the middle. Why do guys gel their hair now with a peak in the middle? They look like they're in the back room of Ringling Brothers.
Well, he's the handsomest pretty that you ever did see.
The Bobettes. Are there any Bobettes listening to the show now, perhaps from a assisted living facility in Boca Raton? Transfusion tree, Walker. Horrible to think about. Get it off the show. It's horrible to think about what happens to people. I think of the girls I made out with when I was in high school, what they must look like today. I don't go to reunions. Do I ever want to see myself aging? It's like worse than the portrait of Dorian Gray. Why would I want to go to a reunion? I still think I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't really think that I've aged at all. And they probably don't think they've aged at all, you know. And you got to look at each other and say, whoa, what happened to you? But to think somebody that you, here's the point. You were so hot over this person, passionate, crazy. You couldn't sleep. Your heart was pounding. And now you take a look at time and gravity, what it does to all of us. And then it brings me to Tom McCann. John McCain. Oh, my God. This guy is like dragging himself through the campaign. Like he's starting to look worse by the day and making one mistake after another. But I don't want to talk about him. I really don't. I don't really. What's there to talk about? You know, you can ridicule a person only so much, so I'm not going to do it. You know, I wish him good luck. And boom. So I see that Obama's hateful preacher is now suddenly being given a new look. They're marching him around the left-wing media. So he goes on, whose show is he going on? Tim Lehrer? Jim Lehrer? The baggy-eyed Bolshevik or the other one? Oh, Bill Moyers, the guy. Remember who Bill Moyers is? He worked for Jimmy Carter, to give you some idea how fair-minded Bill Moyers is. He's the other left-wing radical. So he has the audacity to have this guy pass to Wright, or Reverend Wright, on the show coming up. And they make him look like the night. It makes him look close, as close to Jesus as you can imagine. Mild, meek, peaceful, nothing like what they actually said. Play what he actually said so they don't forget who this guy is when they watch Bill Moyers. You know, God, the Monero, blah, 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 blah. You forgot it already? You can't find the soundbite? Lost in the shuffle already. I gave him one intuitive shot out of the unplanned, and boom. Right away, they dropped the ball, the tape spinning on the floor, the wires exploding, the red lights are going off, and I don't have a soundbite.
They lied about inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. Governments lied. The government lied about a connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. And a connection
all right, turn it off. Turn the nut bar up. So that's Obama's pastor. Everybody knows that the guy is America white hater. Now, Bill Moyers now goes, all right, let get him around the circuit. Let's send him around to Tim Russert, the garbage man's son. Get him over to Jimmy Carter's guy. Who else do we own in the media? All of them? All right, send him around on a tour. Make him look good. Make sure he carries a big cross, okay? And when he gets up there, don't let him revert. If he reverts, make sure you cut it. Give him the 17-second lead. In fact, in his case, let's make sure we got a 30-second soundbite cut that we can insert of him praising the Lord, all right? And now he's coming around. There he is. So you're supposed to believe what you believe or what you hear? Do you hear what you hear or you hear what they want you to hear? Do you see what you see or you want to see what you don't want to see? That's why I say play Hushabye by the Mystics and I'll take a break. Play Hushabye by the Mystics and I'll take a break.
Hushabye, oh my darling.
Turn it off. I don't like this song. No, I'm not taking a break. I got to hear one good piece. That's not my kind of... that was probably a group that had a big hit. Then this was the next follow-up, which went nowhere, and they were working in a car wash till they went back to Parsons School of Design. And now God knows where they are, somewhere in... how about playing Rama Lama Ding Dong? We'll try the Etzels. Yeah. I go to break. You know, an ad would be better than this. God, this is horrible. Go to an ad.
Later, alligator. After a while, crocodile. See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile.
See, that's when America could do anything, when music like this was out. The whole world was our oyster. Now we're an empty shell, it seems. What a stooge is running the country. Ma, what a strunz. My God. How did this happen? I don't mind corruption, but give me somebody competent who's corrupt, who could speak. These guys, turn it on. You think of guys like this singing that kind of song? They were tough Southern guys. They took no prisoners. They were white-knuckle guys. They could blow your head off with their fists. I mean, what happened to this country? Where did they all go? I know they're around. I know it. I watch Extreme Fighting. I see the cop shows. I see how tough the cops are and what they have to deal with. They're still around. It's the rats in the media. They make you think that every white male is a... Now, let me just stop right there. If this keeps up, I'm thinking of buying an island somewhere in the South Pacific and starting a cult. No, it will not be a polygamy cult. That is not my orientation. And it won't be a religion, just a cult. It'll be a cult called Borders, Language, and Culture. I'll rename the island America, and we'll start all over again. Does that work for you? We'll rename it America, and we'll start all over again. We'll use the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights as our founding documents, and let's see how far we can get and how long it lasts. No, I don't know. Yeah, I was reading a story that for a couple hundred thousand years, you know, mankind lived in small groups. I'm not surprised with that. But we're fundamentally tribal people. Tribes gathered around strong leaders. It didn't mean the leader who could necessarily kill everybody. It meant the leader who was wise enough to lead them. The guy who could, you know, the guy who could actually do the beating up, the tough guys, sometimes was smart enough to work for the guy who was smarter than them. And that's how the tribe survived. If you turned it over to the thug, in other words, the gangbanger in the street, what you wound up with is what you have in certain districts of America today, with everyone shooting each other because there's no brains there. There's just brawn and stupidity. So, you see, they need leadership. They don't even have leadership. All they have is killing. Shall I tell you the story of Love by the Sewer Plant? In order to do that, I have to set this up. Play the Shabub Shabub song. I Only Have Eyes for You. I want to go back in time now. And I hope that the girl involved is not listening. I pray to God.
I can't see anyone but
you. We're talking Springland, not Springland. We're talking, I don't know the town anymore. We're talking Route 42. We're talking 56, 57. We're talking a sewer plant. We're talking about Love by the Sewer Plant. First Love by the Sewer Plant. Now, this girl was so beautiful that the, like, it was like summer stock. Turn that on. They can't listen to me in the music. They got the mood already. We said it. In other words, this was a small hotel, like, you know, nothing fancy. The owner was a former boxer, a pugilist. He was the one where I told you that Jackie, who worked at the hotel, got thrown in the pool. I don't remember the name of him. But he was a tough guy, this guy, genuinely tough guy. And that if he got into an argument with anyone who worked for him, he beat them up and threw them off the property, that type. Everyone was terrified of him. Old school, New York Jewish kind of street fighter type. So he ruled this little hotel that he had like with an iron thumb. An iron, whatever, iron boot. He was a tough guy, and things ran right. Nothing ever went wrong. No one robbed cutlery. No one talked back. So anyway, I'm a kid. There's a kid there, and boom, it's loved by the sewer plant across down the thing in the river by the Neversink River. The water was so cold that when you waded across it, your feet turned blue. And I'll get to the sewer plant in a minute.
Hi, this is Greg Zappa.
I'm out of business already. Break again. Here we
go.
Friday. What do you want me to do? You want me to talk about the news of who's out of touch with reality? Or Sean Bell verdict in New York City? Or, well, I mean, what news? You know, it's your show, too. 1-800-449-8255. We got all sorts of stories, and I don't know that every one of them is worth truthfully getting excited about right now. There's only so much I can take all week, you know. By Friday already, it's a little heavy burden. You know, he ain't heavy, Father. He's my brother. But there's only so far I can carry my brother called the news. You know, I'm no brother from the other planet, from another planet. But there are stories. I mean, you know, we got fascism brewing in America with mothers separated from their babies and the vermin in the media spitting on them because they don't dress like sluts. Because the sect mothers don't dress like whores and prostitutes, the vermin in the media who do dress like such women have been sneering at them. You take a look at the psychotic faces on CNN, Fox News, the leg-crossing sluts on those channels are literally salivating with joy because the women who don't dress like sluts and whores lost their children. And, you know, this story really bothers me a great deal because I've seen a lot of miscarriage of justice in my life and in the news business. To me, someone asked me yesterday, I was in a motor vehicle bureau, a young man, he said, are you in favor of polygamy? I said, that's irrelevant. I said, what's at stake here is the constitutionality of the act by the state of Texas, by the Texas Rangers. I said, that's the issue. The issue was not polygamy. The issue was a violation of their constitutional rights. And how every liberal in this country is not up in arms, I understand, because they hate normalcy. They would rather have these children grow up as drug addicts and degenerates in foster homes than grow up sane in a polygamy home. Do you understand that? Because in a polygamy home, it's a patriarchy. And all of the left wing is against the patriarchy. That's what this is all about. This is of, by, and for the radical lesbian feminist mafia. That's what this is all about. So I don't even want to get started on this, truthfully. I may be the only one in the media talking about it from the point of view of really what's happening, but so be it. It won't be the first nor the last time that I'm all alone on this thing. Now, where was I when I got so agitated by thinking about the news? Because to me, this is a big one. What can you say that I haven't said? Nothing. Play Hush Abide by the Mystics, and I will calm down. I will hush Abide by the Mystics. Kill it. Don't like the record. Immediately don't like it. I mean, make believe I'm like Max Smeltz in the record business. And guys are coming in. They're gonna play music for me. And within 3 seconds, I could tell if it's a hit. All right, bring them in. Who's coming in now? Let me hear the next one. Who's this? Let me hear that Shirley and Leva. Let me hear that. I like it. I'll put my ear to it. Let me hear Let the Good Times Roll. Let me hear that one.
Come on, baby, let the good time roll.
Oh, it's a good one. Sign him up. I'm the producer and I wrote it. Get him out of here. Get him out of here. Give him a couple of joints and a few $100. Get the entire piece out of him. I'm the producer and the writer. Now, you want me to do that pantomime? Listen, I can go into various pantomimes for you, too. Why do you think I am so good at pantomime and voice changes? Because I'm in pain all the time from the world's conditions. Since I'm a child. It's like, I did this as a kid. 6 years old, I ran down Longfellow Avenue in the Bronx screaming, the world is coming to an end. The world is coming to an end, because I read in the paper that an atomic bomb had gone off somewhere. And I said, oh, my. I saw the whole future. I saw the future. But if you look at the Bible, it says, you know, your young men shall prophesize and your old men shall dream dreams. I'm not yet an old man. I'm still a young man. And I've been sort of prophesizing in some way on a minor scale. I'm not putting myself in the league of somebody great like Wolf Blitzer. Or the leprechaun. I'm a minor prophet. But what would you like to talk about on the show? You want to hear Out of Touch with Reality or Love by the Yeshua Plant? You want to hear that story? That's a story I told merely once, but it's a bit. I'll tell Love by the Sewer Plant, but starting with the Shabup Shabup again. Now I got time to tell it. Again, they can't find it. Again,
my love full. Must be a kind of blind.
This is unbelievable. I lost my desire to talk already.
I can't see anyone but
on the uptake,
you.
They're not. I got a migraine. Just clicked in. All right side of the head is out. They don't understand this. How could the audience follow my brain? I got to make them follow. How? Explain to them. All right. Okay, turn it off now. It's 56-57, Plymouth Fury. 59. My uncle had a Plymouth Fury, I think. I'm not sure. Somewhere around then. Outside one of the hotels in the Catskill Mountains. I'm still young, 15. I don't know how old I was, something like that. So, Fall in Love, First Love by the Sewer Plant. Here's how it is. This girl was so stunningly gorgeous, like just really beautiful, that the theater companies would come through. They had like an entertainment in these hotels, like they call it a casino. At night, they'd have entertainment. Sometimes they'd have a comedian who was terrible, a juggler, a balloon man, who then eventually the father of the guy who went on XM or Sirius. His father was a balloon man, allegedly, who went around making pornographic images with balloons, as the son does verbally. Things like that. In other words, schlocky entertainment. So, nevertheless, they thought they were artists. You got to understand that. Even though they were schlocky entertainment, let's say they could paint velvet paintings, they're still a painter. In their mind, they're Van Gogh. They were theatrical, and everyone else was bourgeois, you know. The other people ate the borscht, and they ate the shav. In other words, they were the artistes, so they understood. So, in other words, some of these entertainers came around, and they looked at this girl, and they came running up. I was holding her hand and walking with her. We were kids. And they said, Manny, I wanted you to see this girl. This is the girl I was telling you about. And they, like, looked at her like she was a specimen of, you know, like biblical beauty. So to make a long story short, it's just Young Love by the Sewer Plant. And what I meant was, where are you going to go when you're a kid? You got nowhere to go. So we took a walk down the hill, down the hill, down the hill, down the hill, down the hill. Jack and Jill went down the hill. And it was a long slope down to the Neversink River. And there was a sewer treatment plant, which occasionally, as you well know, with sewer treatment plants, they're not exactly, they don't smell that good. But kids don't care. They can override anything, particularly when the lust hits them. So the two kids walk down the hill, they cross the river, and their feet, they roll up the dungarees, take off the shoes, the legs are blue, and they have a little moment of passion together. And it was his first moment of passion. It was not exactly on the level of a complete moment of passion, but for him it was the first of that type. So now the kid is starstruck and walked like stars in his eyes after that. There were not enough stars in the sky that night in the black sky and the billions of stars to equal the passion that he had for the world, where he thought he could literally reach out, grab a star and fly away. That's how phenomenal he felt as a youngster. But then, of course, as you well know, nothing like that lasts. So what I'm getting at with the story is that it was by a sewer plant and there's nothing more to it. And boom, and now play some John Coltrane, because there's no more to the story that I care to tell, because if I do, it'll become a pantomime, and I don't want to embarrass myself with a pantomime of something that was quite beautiful. So why don't you play some John Coltrane so they'll understand why it ended that way. Anyway, it just ends abruptly. Good jazz ends abruptly, like good stories. You don't have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, because sometimes the ends are not as good as the beginning or the middle, and it's just as well to end it in the middle. You know what I'm saying? That's it. Now let's go to the callers. Really, I'm thinking of buying an island. I don't know how much more I can take of this. Do you know that if I – you can laugh at me all you want. If I bought an island, a large island somewhere in the South Seas – and I don't want to do the guru thing. I don't even like the robes and the Rolls Royce. I'm not talking about that. And I wanted to create the ideal community. Let's say you're talking about Plato's Republic, okay? We're not talking about Plato's Retreat here. We're talking about Plato's Republic, not Plato's Retreat, if you understand what I'm saying here. You're talking about the New Republic, the real New Republic. You created from the beginning. Could it last? Could it work? I've thought about it over the years. I have the charisma to do it. I'm a born leader, obviously, by my success in radio and in other ventures in my life. But I've always avoided and shunned doing this all my life. I could have done this 30 years ago. I could have been one of those guys, you know, and cashed in and bombed out by now. I never wanted to do it. I always felt there was something fraudulent in most of these people and something fraudulent in leading people astray. But the world today is becoming so bad. America is so collapsed around me in terms of what I would like to see, that I'm not, you know, half kidding when I say I'd like to bail out and start a whole new world. Sarasota, Jeannie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I want to be the first one to sign up for your island. I'm serious.
I know. I couldn't offer any social security though, Jeannie.
Well, I've got my own way. I'll make my own living, and I'm very handy and artistic, and we'll just go from there.
I hear you. You see that? She's not looking for a handout from day one already. KNEW, San Francisco, bing, bing, Kat, welcome. What's on your mind?
Michael.
Kat, yes.
Yeah, Liam. I just want to know if you're going to be bringing the Klitschko brothers out to that island with you. I saw your picture on michaelsavage.com with Vladimir Klitschko.
Oh, we were at the fight where I met John McCain. Yeah, Klitschko's my hero, one of my heroes.
Oh yeah, that was
Klitschko, the world heavyweight champion. I think he still is in one of the leagues, so to speak. Klitschko is my hero for a number of reasons. Not solely because he's a boxer; he's also a PhD, so he's a man of the mind. And I said to him, "Does that help you or hurt you in the ring?" He said, "What do you think it's all about?" He said, "It's all in the mind." He said that to me. It was amazing.
Wow. Hey,
you Michael, know, he said, "I said to him, does your PhD help you in a boxing ring?" He said, looked at me and smiled, because he knows I'm an educated man. He said to me, "What do you think it's all about?" He said, "Fighting is all in the mind. It's all strategy." I mean, that's when it's all in your mind. It's all in your mind when you have the skills to go with it. You're not going to put a weakling in a ring with a heavyweight and he's going to beat him because he's smarter. He's saying, given all things being equal, it's up to the mind, you know, and the strategy. But he was a great, very, very nice man for the few moments we talked there at that fight. Thank you for the call. Thank you. Kat, KNEW, go ahead, please.
We all make mistakes, don't we?
I do.
I just wanted to make a quick comment about your earlier statement about seeing the lady with the pierced nose with the child running around barefoot and
yes,
knowing that she was an Obama or Hillary voter. I have piercings myself, and I'm not, and I just wanted to stick up for us that look.
I hear you. No, I've had this call before. A lot of guys who are very conservative have piercings. I know that. No, but it was a type of piercing she had. It wasn't a regular big nose ring piercing. It was a teeny weeny, almost invisible nostril stud.
Okay.
Well, like a sneak, in other words, a sneaky piercing. An invisible one, only for her and her her hairdresser, so to speak. Are your piercings visible, or are they for you, yourself and others that you choose to show them to?
I have one that's in the inner part of my ear that is...
Like, oh, thank God. I got frightened. Oh, man, I was doing the family show. Inner ear? Inside your ear?
The thickest part of your ear. The
you mean the lobe, like a girl has an earring. That area? No.
Middle.
Oh, okay, the ear. Okay, that's normal already. Where else do you have one?
Not really. It hurts. I never hardly ever see it. But, you know, I just feel like...
Wait. So where else do you have one? I mean, that we can talk about on the radio.
I used to have my belly button. Used to have other parts of my body, you know, but...
So you were young. Look, I've met people who are very nice people who do this. I understand that. You know, it's almost a disconnect. It's a weird thing, Kat. I've met people who are actually the sweetest people on earth. That you talk to them, they open the tongue. It looks like a ring. I don't know what they do that for. Why would you put a stud in your tongue?
Well, I did because I get bored and I click it. You know, it's just something. And you know, I guess.
Wait, what do you mean? You click it against your palate?
Your teeth.
Your teeth. In other words, it's almost an OCD thing.
Oh, I guess so. But, you know, it's also kind of like a rebellion act against your...
Couldn't you get castanets?
I'm sorry?
Couldn't you get castanets instead?
Those are the things
you click in your hand if you're from Argentina and the police are chasing you. You become a dancer. So, I mean, the tongue one worries me because, I mean, people get infections when you put that in your tongue.
Oh, I've had it since I was about 15, so...
Ooh, I don't want to go there. But you're going to remove it when you get older or not?
Well, I'm approaching 30, so I don't know. My husband...
Oh, well, if you want to meet someone and settle down... Well, unless he likes it, you know, it's hard to say what guys like today. I don't know what... Nobody wants to settle down, Kat, really, other than unless you live in Alabama. And I'm not putting down... You're living in San Francisco. The odds of a woman getting married at the age of 30 or settling down with someone is pretty low, isn't it?
Well, I've been married since I was 19 for 9 years now, and I have 3 children.
You saved it for the end. You were setting me up. So, okay, there it goes. Your husband has piercings, too?
I'm sorry?
Does he vote Republican, Democrat, Independent, or Communist?
Pretty much Republican.
So you're two Republican tongue piercers with children. Very nice demographic, that is. I'm surprised you weren't in the exit polls in Pennsylvania. Tongue-piercing Republicans with children, that would be a good one for Rasmussen. That's about who they should be talking to. Play some music for me. What do you want to talk about? WOR, Sal, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, I'd love to get into your mind just for 5 minutes. It's amazing how your mind works. It's so fast. And I could tell you get bored right away. It's just... so fast how your mind works. How do you do that?
Here's the thing, Sal, and I'm asking you and millions of others at the same moment. Do the shifts bother you, the quick shifts sometimes, or do you enjoy changing tune real rapidly? Because, you know, after all, this is a major market medium thing here. Do people like the rapid shifts, do you think?
I do. I love it. Because I don't know what you're going to say next. It's amazing how you can be talking about one thing and switch to another and still make sense.
And still make sense. Yeah, it's called stream of consciousness, but they're connected in a way.
But I don't know.
In other words, if I'm talking about like tongue studs or nose rings, I could easily start talking about stainless steel in 2 seconds and stainless steel knives, and you'd understand why I did it, correct?
That's what I mean. I can't, but you still make sense. I've seen people talk, change subjects, and they make no sense whatsoever.
That's beautiful. See, this is beautiful. At least you enjoy the changes. My father, may he rest in peace, used to look at me, and I'd see he was puzzled over me. And he would say to me, either you're going to wind up a genius or a madman. That's all. Poor dad. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You are. I'd like to wake up and ride.
It is the Savage Nation. It's Rock and Roll Friday. I'm trying to take it a little on the easier side, but there's no such thing in the world we live in. Now, the top left story on MichaelSavage.com is very, very frightening. And the headline is jihadist. The word jihadist booted from government lexicon. You can't call them jihadists anymore. You can't use the word al-Qaeda anymore. The Bush administration has catered to CARE and launched a new language war. And this time you can't say Islamofascism, jihadist, jihad, or even al-Qaeda. You can only use the word terrorist. So my headline is, CARE caponizes Bush. You see, the Bush administration has instructed the State Department, the Department of Homeland Security, the National Counterterrorism Center, and other agencies to stop using the words jihadists and Islamofascists to describe terrorists, which is, of course, why your three-year-old son is frisked at an airport while people in robes from the Middle East are allowed to waltz right through. You don't want to insult them. You don't want to radicalize any people from the Middle East. So it's better that you permit a bomber, a potential bomber from the Middle East, to go through a security check without sticking a wand in between his legs, and instead insult a nun, insult a child, somebody in a wheelchair, strip search him. But let the potential jihadists, who we all know are the potential jihadists, march right through. That's the New World Order. That's Alice in Wonderland. That's the unbrave New World. That's why George Bush is the most unpopular president in American history. That's all. You know, the hour is up. I can't believe this. I got so many good topics yet that I'm going to get to. And good rock and roll today. We got others. We got this. So we got that. So we got this. I'll take whatever you want. I'll take calls on the Sean Bell case. Many people outside of New York don't even know what it is. We'll talk about illegal immigration in terms of what it's doing across America, the scourge that it actually is, and how people themselves know it. Everybody knows it except the federal government, which may know it, but it's like George Bush saying there's no recession. It's a downtick. That's him like saying immigration has been good for America and immigrants come here to work. Mr. President, how come one-third of all immigrants are in prison? I mean, one-third of all prisoners are immigrants. Duh. I never saw that statistic.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
Tears on my pillow, pain in my heart caused by you. Ooh.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Give us some Jell-O. We'll see. I was reading an article today, to switch gears completely, in the USA Today, CNN, The Incredible Shrinking City, and it's about Youngstown, Ohio, which is actually shrinking. Its population has shrunk by more than a half over the last 40 years. They now have empty homes, streets, and neighborhoods. This is the Rust Belt, so to call. But the interesting part of the story is this. In a radical move, the city is actually paying people to leave. In other words, let's say there's a block where there's only one or two occupied homes and the others are abandoned. The city is offering the people in the occupied homes $50,000 in grants for those homeowners to move so they can knock down all the houses and turn it into open space, the object being that the city saves money by cutting back on services like garbage pickups and street lighting in deserted areas. So here's a town, Youngstown, Ohio, that once had 165,000 residents, and its population is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, and they're actually shrinking the city. And this is an opposite viewpoint of what America once was. And they talk about what happened in 1977. They call it Black Monday, when Youngstown Sheet and Tube, a factory, abruptly closed its doors. It says 5,000 people showed up for work one day and were turned away. The city lost its heart and soul. Within years, all the mills vanished. Idle workers were watching as one of the oldest blast furnaces in the valley were dynamited. And he said, I saw those hard men, shot and beer guys, standing there crying, he said. And, you know, it's a symbol of what's going on in the United States of America. It didn't start yesterday. And it reminds me of another time when villages were being deserted. This is not the first time in history, nor will it be the last, that demographics have changed, nor income for a nation or a state has changed. I'm reminded of Oliver Goldsmith, the English writer of 1770, who wrote The Deserted Village. And in his great poem, he wrote, ill fares the land to hastening ills a prey, where wealth accumulates and men decay. Princes and lords may flourish or may fade. A breath can make them as a breath has made. But a bold peasantry, their country's pride, when once destroyed, can never be supplied. This was taught to me by an old friend a long time ago, and he used to repeat this first couplet of this long, long poem, The Deserted Village, over and over again. It meant a lot to him. He was a scientist, by the way. And I'll read it to you again. Oliver Goldsmith, The Deserted Village, from 1770. Listen to this. Ill fares the land to hastening ills a prey, where wealth accumulates and men decay. Princes and lords may flourish or may fade. A breath can make them as a breath has made. But a bold peasantry, their country's pride, when once destroyed, can never be supplied. And he was talking about villages that were being hollowed out in England in the 1770 era, when people were moving from the country where they were growing their own food into the cities because England was industrializing and factory workers were needed. And so they left the countryside and they moved into the factories. And of course, the country was dying. That was then and this is now. Now, today we see almost a reversal in the United States of America, where the factories are dying and the people are moving on to nothingness. There's no jobs for them at all. It's a little different to move from the country to the city and abandon your village for a better job. But what do you do when you have nothing to go to? That's America today for so many people. But we don't see this. Instead, the people who own the media only show you the, let's say they only show you other pictures. That's all there is. So there it is. That's a little opening that I wanted to give you, The Incredible Shrinking City to The Deserted Village of 1770, to Oliver Goldsmith, The Deserted Village. We're going to take a quick piece of music. God knows if I had perfect music for it, it would be called The Deserted Village, but we don't. Then I'll take your calls on other topics. What music would you suggest, guys? What would go with this? Nothing. Oh, perfect. Yeah, really fits The Deserted Village. Great. Why not? What's the difference? May as well play the Buick ad from 1950 for all I care. Turn this off, please. It's so unmatched. Now I have a double migraine. I love it. I mean, you know, teach this to your children. Will you please? It's like If by Rudyard Kipling, which I've read on the show over and over again, and many of you went out and bought it. What's wrong with reading some of the great English writers like Oliver Goldsmith, The Deserted Village, when his words are still true? Ill fares the land to hastening ills a prey, where wealth accumulates and men decay. You're telling me where wealth accumulates, men don't decay? Take a look at Wall Street. Look at the vermin on Wall Street. Take a look at Hollywood. Take a look at the filth of Hollywood, where wealth accumulates and men decay. You don't have to look any further than that pimp on HBO. You have to look any further than that? Princes and lords may flourish or may fade. He's talking about media vermin like that. A breath can make them as a breath has made. They're made by a breath. You get some of the perverts in Creative Artists Agency, excuse me, one man's opinion. They can make a prince or they can destroy a prince. They control everything. As long as that person promotes their agenda of degeneracy, in my opinion, promotes their agenda of hating America, promotes their agenda of homosexual marriage, they can make princes or destroy princes, in my opinion. But a bold peasantry, their country's pride, when once destroyed, can never be supplied. So there is the divide, as I see it. And you have to go back to the restoration in the 18th century. Perhaps you didn't get to college, or perhaps you do. I'm sure this is not taught anymore, but Oliver Goldsmith was a relatively minor writer of his time. You know, he wrote things like A Bookseller's Visit to the Chinese. But I don't want to go through the whole thing because it wouldn't make any sense. But who was he? Maybe you heard of Boswell. You know, Boswell was certainly more famous than Oliver Goldsmith, who lived between 1728 and 1774. He was an Englishman. His father was a clergyman and a farmer with a small income and a large family. And so that's who he was, and I'll move on. His most important work was called The Citizen of the World, or Letters from a Chinese Philosopher Residing in London to His Friends in the East. It was a whole thing. But to me, The Deserted Village was the best one. Now that I've gotten esoteric and a little too off the mark, I'll go back to the regular callers. We'll do meat and potatoes. We'll just dice and eat. It's like a Denny's show. Now we got to eat like with peas and carrots and a captain's plate. The peas are here. The carrots are there. The meat is here. The gravy is there. And there's the iced tea. And that's what they're ready because they listen to the maestro of the golf bag and they don't know what I'm talking about. KNEW, Matthew, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, but we do, Michael. We do. We love it. We don't get this kind of stuff anywhere else. You're in rare form today, and as a musician, you are riffing hard, my friend.
Good. So you're a musician. See, this is something musicians would get. This is musical. I'm absolutely like doing music today.
Oh, it's incredible. It's like you're playing over the changes. That's the term that
yep.
is used in jazz.
Look, I don't know music from a hole in the wall, but aren't chord variations very similar to what I'm doing?
Absolutely. You're changing. It's called playing over the changes, and that's exactly what you're doing with your thought process. And
what instrument do you play, Matthew?
I'm a guitar player.
You know, all my life I try to play instruments. I would pick up an instrument, Matthew. Well, listen to an interesting story. Kids don't know what they can do and can't do. Luckily, I could experiment. I tried the drums, but I didn't have the skill for it. It's a very difficult skill to play the drums, right? You know that. I tried the flute, but I couldn't do very well at it. I couldn't really play an instrument, and yet I have the mind of a musician in some ways.
Absolutely. I play and teach guitar here, and I do it because I love it. And I can recognize genius right away, and it's
I love that. No, I was going back to what my father, you know, he was not an educated man, but he was worried about me because I had dark eyes, I still do, and he couldn't plumb the depths of my mind. You understand, I wasn't like an ordinary kid. So he would look at me, and I could see this guy who has struggled all his life, an immigrant. He was afraid for me. He didn't know what I was. He couldn't define it. So he once said to me when I was a little older, he says, I don't know with you. He said, either you'll be a genius or a madman. What he didn't know is you can be both at once and still survive.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like
I mean, what are you afraid of being a madman for? Everybody has madness in them, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, it's incredible. It's like listening to a jazz musician play a song when I listen to you talk. You're in rare form, especially these last couple of days, but especially today.
Isn't it funny how people can listen to a show and pick up on the mood of the host and pick up on where the guy's head is at? I do feel more optimistic in the last few days because it's the political landscape has gotten so insane. And I know that all three politicians are lacking, to be very polite. I know that it's all a fix anyway, that I think the whole fix is in and someone that already has been picked, the whole thing's a charade, that I just don't care anymore.
Sure. Yeah, it's I can see that. I can hear it in your voice.
I don't really care about him. I'm going to sit here and root for McCain. Why? Why should I care? Because he's the lesser of three evils? I don't see any pee underneath that nut, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, I know exactly what you're saying.
Hey, that's a good line. I don't see any pee under that nut. That got three or four different meanings at once. But I will tell you that Cindy McCain would make a better first lady than would Bill Clinton. I got to tell you that.
I have to agree. I mean, I think she wears the pants in the family.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you very much for listening so carefully. Did you like Oliver Goldsmith, the Deserted Village?
I loved it, man. We don't get that anywhere else. It's incredible. It's like going to a college class and sitting and listening to a professor talk about our history. We don't get that anymore. You can't go to a classroom and hear that kind of thing anymore.
Well, look, I come on late in the day across America, Matthew. They've all heard all the stories. They've heard, the different guys, and they're all good in their own way, let's be honest. Everyone has their own style. I'm different, and I have always been a little different, so, you know, here's where I be. I can't just do the stories everyone's heard about all day long because I'm bored of them by now. I will work in the news. I will work in the stories. I will work in the election. But by and large, those aren't the most interesting things in the world to me nor to my audience. I think that, sure, I have an audience that wants to hear that stuff, but by and large, my audience is a little more demanding in some ways.
Absolutely. I've called you several times over the years, and it's just because I have to tell you when you're hitting your mark. And today, you really have. You really polished it off really well.
Good, and, good. I'm glad you got the changeover from Rama Lama Ding Dong to the deserted village. On that note, my friend, thank you for listening to KNEW. Let's go to Let the Good Times Roll. We will then go to a quick commercial break. And I might even talk about cars in a minute. I'm in the mood to get in a car tonight, drive to Alaska. I may even take up smoking. I'm in such a weird mood. If you get in one of these whacked out weird moods where you want to just walk away from everything, I feel like loading up, filling up the gas tank and buying as much rice as I can at Costco, buying a pack of Camels and driving off into the sunset. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Look at me. I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree.
No, I do not have an XK140 Jaguar, and I'm not Clint Eastwood, but I am playing Misty for you. Not bad. Good line.
I get misty.
Here I am sitting in a sweatsuit all alone in a radio studio, talking to unknown millions. Johnny Mathis. Is that Johnny Mathis? He's still living, isn't he? Still performing somewhere, like in Reno. He doesn't do Las Vegas. I'm sure he does like Reno or Card Room. He was very big when girls loved him. He was like Liberace. I never knew why women like Liberace. I couldn't understand, like, straight, middle-aged women like Liberace, like, you know, with candelabra. As a boy, I didn't understand it. I would, like, go along with, yeah, my, and some of the women were crazy about Liberace. Anyway, with cheerful wisdom and instructive mirth, I return to you here on the Savage Nation talking about this and that. It's Friday. And whatever you want to do, I'll do an open mic if you want, 1-800-449-8255. Let me read you from Samuel Johnson, please. I want to read you some lines that are so eternally great. The Rambler, 1750. Every old man complains of the growing depravity of the world, of the petulance and insolence of the rising generation. Remember, this is 1750, okay? Can you believe this? Every old man complains of the growing depravity of the world, of the petulance and insolence of the rising generation. He recounts the decency and regularity of former times and celebrates the discipline and sobriety of the age in which his youth was passed, a happy age which is now no more to be expected, since confusion has broken in upon the world and thrown down all the boundaries of civility and reverence. You know, when you look at this and you realize it was written in 1750, it gives you a pause that maybe things are not quite as bad as you think it is sometimes, you know. You understand? Let me read you a little more. The general story of mankind will evince that lawful and settled authority is very seldom resisted when it is well employed. Gross corruption or evident imbecility gross corruption or evident imbecility is necessary to the suppression of that reverence with which the majority of mankind look upon their governors and on those whom they are surrounded by splendor and fortified by power. That's a phenomenal sentence. In other words, he's saying the general story of mankind will say that lawful and settled authority is very seldom resisted when it is well employed. In other words, a leader can lead you if he does it properly. If it's well employed, it's very rarely resisted. But he says gross corruption or evident imbecility, that makes a lot of sense in our country, is necessary to the suppression of that reverence for authority. You get it? For though men are drawn by their passions into forgetfulness of invisible rewards and punishments, yet they are easily kept obedient to those who have temporary dominion in their hands till their veneration is dissipated by such wickedness and folly as can neither be defended nor concealed. Wickedness and folly. Now, we don't particularly have wickedness on the order of Zimbabwe, where that psychopath who the UN, if it had any validity at all, would go in with a strike force and take out Mugabe. I mean, he's killing the opposition. He just lost the election, and that African dictator is killing the opposition in Zimbabwe. If the UN had any validity, it'd go in and take him out and try him and execute him for what he's done to his own country, starvation and slaughter and genocide against his own people. But UN is worthless. You know that. It's worthless. But I don't want to go into it, because I go into that, then I'm going to get mad. And I don't want to get mad. In fact, I want to get unmad. And the only way I can get unmad is I may do Unsavaged, Dr. Unsavaged. That's too hard on my voice, but I'll try it.
Savage.
It's now or never. Come hold me tight. Kiss me, my darling.
It is the Savage Nation. I am in a good mood. Something's wrong. I better go to the doctor.
Tomorrow,
I don't know what's wrong. Why do I feel good? There's no reason for this. I feel liberated. I mean, don't accuse me of being a liberal. I just feel liberated. And I'm not a libertine. Maybe I should become a libertine. I have been a libertine in my life. It always gets you in trouble. You think that you can do anything. You can't. You wind up banging into a stone wall. Could you play Elvis for like 3 seconds louder and then boom? So anyway, we're talking about this and that. You know, people are like, they don't like Savage. Why? He reads English literature. You can't trust a man who reads English literature. It shows racist tendencies. Boy, anybody who goes back to English literature, they must be a racist. They're not talking in broken English. They're not speaking in one syllable that I can understand. He's not an average guy. He's not a trustworthy Republican. Remember the poem If by Rudyard Kipling? Remember that? If you can be a man, my son. Send me that, Beowulf. I don't have it handy. I don't want to preach to them. But I would rewrite If by Rudyard Kipling. Maybe stuff like, if you can. See, if I were to rewrite If for the average blue-collar guy who's out of work, the shot and beer guy, it would be like, if you can gut a deer and not lose a tear, then you'll be a man, my son. If you can do shots and beers all night long, then you'll be a man, my son. See, that kind of thing. That would sell better than you know, if you can, anything esoteric and highfalutin. No one likes that. But I have found that the common man actually does like a little bit of the highfalutin stuff. They just don't get it. They're not stupid. See, people are not stupid. I learned that when I was a kid, is that the average man is not so average. Some of them are very smart. They just have not had the opportunity to develop their mind. They haven't been exposed to it. They were busy making a living or whatever. They're in jail, the army, who knows what. It doesn't mean they're dumb. I don't have to tell you that. How many criminals have I met in my life who are pretty smart? They never went to school. You know, the people I met on Wall Street, every one of them never went to school. But or the people in the record business, forget about it. Politicians, take a look at them, how far they've gone without an education. In fact, the less education. But anyway, you know, what does education have to do with anything? You got to do it if you really want something out of it other than a job. Job-oriented education is, of course, very important today, but it shouldn't be the only reason that you try to learn. The human mind, the cup between your ears needs to be filled. Just as a soul needs to be filled with music. Okay, let's put it to you that way. The soul needs to be filled with other things than money and possessions. Okay, it needs other things. We know that. I know you're saying sex. Sex is great. But is it the only thing? For some, yes. I understand. Is money the only thing? For some, yes. But for the majority of mankind, as obsessed as we may all be with sex and money, we still thirst for that other element or the other elements. And of course, that's where religion enters, the mystical thing of going into a church or a synagogue and the way light hits a certain time and what you feel. That's a very personal feeling that there are no words that can explain that. And it's the same with literature. It's the same with poetry. It's the same with art. It's the same with music. It's indescribable, and that's why it exists. If it didn't fill a need in the human spirit, it wouldn't exist at all. And it's very hard to do on a talk show when it's one man talking with a voice. And, you know, one voice, one tongue and one brain. Now, I could do politics if you want, but politics are kind of limiting. I mean, it's exciting up to a point. But I'd rather do something else on Fridays, if you don't mind, occasionally. And if so, if you want to call in with a doctor on Savage request, I'll try that one or two because my voice does go out now. Years ago, I could do it. It didn't matter today. Or any other topic, even the news, the Bell verdict, the radical Islamists. You can't even say that anymore. I can get arrested for saying jihadist now. George Bush has passed a new edict that you can't say jihadist. You can't call them jihadists. You can't call terrorists radical Islamists or Islamo-fascists. In other words, they're thought police. The Bush administration has now resorted to thought policing. Don't call them jihadists anymore. Don't call al-Qaeda, all the federal agencies. Because according to George Bush's pinheads, such words actually boost support for radicals among Arab and Muslim audiences by giving them a veneer of religious credibility or by causing offense to moderates. That is such rubbish. You know something? These people are dangerously stupid in this administration. This is dangerously stupid, to be honest with you. If these schmucks were running this country in World War II, we would have lost within 2 years. These putzes, these corporate idiots. World War II, we used propaganda against our enemies in order to give our boys the ability to stab them in the guts with a bayonet. That's what you do with your enemy. You show them to be subhuman. That's what you do with your enemy, in case you don't know. I know it shocks you to understand that. But during World War II, every young man who went in the military was shown movies which converted the German and the Japanese into subhumans so they can go there and kill them. Why? Because they were ordinary guys who were not killers. They couldn't go and kill the enemy, and consequently, they would get killed. So you had to show them the other guy was not even a human being in order for them to be able to kill them. And unfortunately, these idiots running the country don't even understand this. So we're going to get killed. A Homeland Security report says U.S. officials may be unintentionally portraying terrorists who lack moral and religious legitimacy as brave fighters, legitimate soldiers. Terminology to define terrorists is a new booklet put out. It says, regarding jihad, even if it is accurate to reference the term, it may not be strategic because it glamorizes terrorism, imbues terrorists with a religious authority. They do not have and damages relations with Muslims around the world, the report says. I've never seen anything like this. Look what the government is putting out right now. Instead of fighting the war on terror now, they have so much money, they're putting out booklets on what you can't say. Some other specifics. Never use the term jihadist or mujahideen. Don't even call them jihadis. And don't call the movement a global jihad. Use the terms violent extremist or terrorist. On the other hand, avoid ill-defined and offensive terminology. We are communicating with, not confronting our audiences. Don't insult or confuse them with pejorative terms such as Islamofascism. Maybe I could be arrested for that. Maybe the government can arrest me for having coined the phrase Islamofascism because it's offensive to Muslims. Then they'll say, we're not opposed to free speech, we're opposed to offensive speech. So we've now moved into absolute Orwellian thought control, mind control in the Bush administration. And believe me, it's not going to get any better. This is all coming from the biggest dunce of all, Secretary of State, Secretary of Statelessness, Condoleezza Rice-Aroni. So I can't wait till she goes back to Stanford and ruins the university and plays the piano and swims and becomes a gym teacher again. God only knows who will be the next Secretary of State. I haven't seen a good one in years. Who was the last good Secretary of State? Who? Who was it? Secretary of Cyrus Vance? No one even knows who he is. Who was the last good Secretary? Okay, Schultz was a good Secretary of State. Clearly, did the job right. But since then, remember the co-ops under Clinton? First he had the co-ops, then he had Madeleine Halfbright, the brisket maker. Then we have Condoleezza Rice. But why go in? They say, I mean, now I'm getting political already. I shouldn't do it at 42 minutes after the hour. Second hour into the show, boom. See, I knew it would happen because people weren't listening to the esoterica. I had to go down to the lasagna, from esoterica to lasagna. Sarasota Curtis, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Michael, I was on the back porch with my wife. We were cooking out some shrimp and scallops, and I was telling her about the rap song that you did, since your theme tonight's music.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I once did a good one. But that I'm not in the raps. I mean, I did a couple of good ones, but I'm not going to do it right now, but thank you. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it all on one game and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on! If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. Rudyard Kipling, hated by the liberal. Hated by the liberal, but what do they know? They know to let their children run around without shoes? That's what they know. Now we can go to do the politics, whatever. But, you know, this is a very important poem for children, boy or girl. You should read this to your boy or girl. You really should. I saw South Park last night. It was so good. I never watch it. But I was clicking around, watching this and that. It was nothing on. Went to sleep early, but I saw a little of South Park. They're getting very brazen. Very, very brazen. Good stuff. Let's go to the callers, okay? What would you like to do? You want a request here and there, the outsourcing, Youngstown, the news. Let's see what we got here. Already I feel the chocolate and the coffee wore off already. I feel a downer coming. I could feel it's like the up and down here, the yin and the yang. Reverend Wright with Bill Moyers of PBS commenting on inflammatory comments he made from the pulpit. Well, Moyers is such a set-up left-winger. Let's hear clip 14 when they try to reinvent Reverend Wright.
What do you think they wanted to communicate?
I think they wanted to communicate that.
Wait. Let's hear 15 if this sounds.
What did you think when you began to see those very brief sound bites circulating as they did?
You know, Moyers, you are an embarrassment. You worked for the... Shut up. Moyers, you worked for the racist anti-Semite Jimmy Carter, and you know better. For you to pander to this Reverend Wright, this blatant black racist like this, shows us that you are A, irrelevant, and B, you have not changed one iota. Shame on you. Shame on you, Bill Moyers. You're worthless. You always were worthless. And remember this, your audience is 1/15th of mine at my lowest. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Volare.
You know, there's a crime wave going on in Florida. I don't know if you know about this. It's a hush-hush, but here's a story out of Daytona Beach. Gangs with black and covered faces, dressed in black with covered faces, are then jumping out of cars and slashing random strangers with razor blades as part of a gang initiation. Now, of course, the boys being slashed are white. They won't say that. It says a gang in Flagler County is sending its future members to Daytona Beach to seek out victims to cut. It could be anybody they see. Joshua Burgundy, one of the victims, required 22 staples after suffering slash wounds on his abdomen and back. You hear this? You don't hear this. You don't want to hear about it? That's a little embarrassing. Now, I hear that the police are being killed at routine traffic stops in South Florida. I've heard of abductions of mothers with children out of parking lots in Boca Raton, and the children are being killed in Boca Raton. So this is a hush-hush. They don't want you to hear any of this because it's bad for real estate. But the gangs are out of control in this country. The gangs are out of control in the United States of America. I don't know that the police can contain them. We may need to put the military or the National Guard on the street. The problem is, in certain areas, we don't have a National Guard. They're in Iraq. We may have to bring them back from Iraq, these hardened urban fighters, and teach them how to fight the gangs that have come in here from Central America. Incidentally, that's what's going on in this country right now. But instead, you hear them talking about such rubbish during these presidential debates that it's a wonder that the people don't lose their minds. How can you listen to this? It has nothing to do with reality. So when John, whatever his name is, McCain, gets up there and says, what do you say about unreality? Play it again. That's so stupid.
They're not listening to me because they're out of touch with reality and the Republican Party.
Okay, that's John McCain, the shoe salesman, saying that the South Carolina Republican Party, or North Carolina, which one is it, Beowulf? North Carolina Republican Party is out of touch with reality for daring to play the Obama pastor speech. You hear? He's in touch with reality. He panders to every group in America except the group that could win the presidency for him, the hardcore conservative group. Forget my show. There are many other shows he won't go on. He is being misadvised by the same schmucks who ran Giuliani off the road, and he's finished. He's killing his own campaign. I'm telling you. It's putz three. That's what you got here. Unbelievable to me. WTNT, Dave, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Well, yeah, hey, I think you should stick to politics. You know, the country needs you. And I also have a second point to make if you have time after.
I do. Go ahead.
Did you notice that the Democrats seem to be Republicans now and the Republicans seem to be Democrats?
Well, yeah, Hillary is tougher on what she would do with Iran than John McCain, who soft-pedaled it.
Well,
I heard you. Well, she was campaigning, remember. What she'd actually do is another story. Nobody knows what she'd have to do. Men dressed in black with covered faces are hunting and then slashing random strangers with razor blades as part of a gang initiation, police warn residents. Covered faces. Nobody knows who they are. They don't know if they're apocalyptos or who they are, right? We're not allowed to even, don't say jihad. Don't say Islam about terrorism. And don't you dare say anything to do with, Central. No, how do you know? You're rushing to judgment. It could be a bunch of rabbis jumping out of the car, or priests. It could be nuns. It could be nuns dressed up in the masks jumping out of the car, attacking people with razors. You never know. It's nuns gone wild. They're pent up in the nunnery, and they're just driving around Daytona Beach and running out with black masks over their face. So don't rush to judgment that it's the apocalypto folks that have snuck over the border. No. It's nuns. And it's the nuns gone wild. They're slashing young men in Daytona Beach. That'll come out from Homeland Security next, that it's nuns who did it. You know. Oh, it's now or never. Play Elvis for me. I need a tune now.
It's now or never. Come hold me tight.
Boy is work for Johnson, by the way, not for a
kiss
peanut.
Me, my darling. Be mine tonight.
Syrian bass.
Tomorrow.
I turn it off already. It stinks. New York City NAACP had Leroy Gadsden reacting to the acquittal of New York City cops. Let's hear 04.
This case is not about justice. This case is about the police officer having the right to act above the law. If the law was in effect here, the judge had followed the law, truly, these officers would have been found guilty. If you're looking at New York State...
Fine. When you become a judge, Mr. Gadsden, we'll believe you. Right now, you're not a judge. I can understand your outrage, and you know the shooters. Two of them were black, one was white, or else they would have been burning a city burned to the ground today. But that didn't stop the scientist Al Sharpton. You know, he's a scientist now. He's gone. Well, he does know a lot about global warming, Al Sharpton. Now that I think about it, he was involved in the Freddy's Fashion Mart fire, and so since he knows about how to start a fire and to get a crowd to throw inflammatory. Flaming items into a store and set it on fire. He probably is an expert on global warming, and that could be why Al Gore chose him to become a new expert on global warming, along with Newt Gingrich, the liar. Imagine Newt Gingrich having the audacity to send out a press release saying the reason he became and went to work for Al Gore on global warming is to put a conservative view. God, Newt, you know, if you just came out and said that you're hungry for money, that you can't make a buck, no one will buy your books, and that you shot your wad and you're over the hill and you need to make a few dollars before before you're in the chair or whatever, we would understand it, that you're just a prostitute like the rest of the politicians. That I could buy. But, Newt, don't tell us you took Al Gore's money and became a spokesman about global warming because you're gonna influence in some way, for God's sakes. And that's why you will join with Al Sharpton, no less, because he's a meteorologist. But as I say, Al Sharpton is a brilliant man in meteorology. We understand that he has a laboratory where he's studying Earth's climate and temperature. And although he may not have gone to high school, I guarantee you he knows more than Albert Einstein, Albert Schweitzer, Jonas Salk put together. Why? Just ask him. He'll tell you why. And although he doesn't have the ability to articulate it the way a normal PhD scientist would, his knowledge of meteorology is so great that he doesn't even have to. All he's got to do is say that he wants to save the Earth. That should be enough for you. And anyone who questions him is probably a stone-hearted racist. I mean, after all, you can't even question why Al Sharpton's a spokesman on this. Of course, it didn't stop him from taking time out from his laboratory research on meteorology to go and march in the streets on calling it an abortion of justice today, verdict in the Sean Bell case. But at least there was no fire, no riot. He didn't throw any rags into a store with flames on it. So we got to thank God for small favors. And maybe you can go to dinner with the leprechaun, and then the leprechaun could say, my God, you people actually use knives and forks, like the leprechaun was alleged to have said.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Cantare. Cantare. I love the way he says that. Cantare. Who could beat Dino? Cantare. Nel blu dipinto. Everybody knows this song. Come on, make believe you're in an Italian restaurant. Sing along. Stumble over the words. Hum it if you don't know it. Volavo felice. Mentre il mondo pian piano spariva lontano laggiù. Una musica dolce suonava soltanto per me. I'm botching the words.
Volare.
Oh-oh.
Oh-oh.
E cantare.
E cantare.
God, this guy had it, didn't he?
Oh-oh.
Some people have just got the genes. No wonder. Happy heart sings. It's a beautiful day out there.
Has given me wings.
Nel blu, dipinto di blu, felice di stare lassù. Welcome to the Savage Nation. You know what's beautiful about this song? Not only that the song is beautiful, but when you think of the immigrant groups that came to this country in the 19th century, the early 20th century, and how each has given something, some great things to the culture, the overall culture, the melting pot. Whatever the peoples were, they brought a cuisine, they brought a humor, they brought a this, they brought her that. We now have people coming in who are bringing hatred. I see them interviewing people that I know don't belong in my country. All they have is hate. They interviewed some people the other day, the new voters on CNN, the new voters they showed them. Now, I'm sorry to tell you, the ones that were full of hate were wearing burkas, full body, and they had the audacity to interview these hateful women, and nothing but like pit vipers, hate came out of their mouth, nothing but hate. Not one said, what a wonderful country, what a great country, I want to be an American. They sat there with a chip on their soul like I've never seen. And I said, what in the world, what kind of country is this? What are these people going to contribute to this country? You know, Islamism, by the way, is not even inherent in Islam. This is a rather recent phenomenon that has been fomented since about the 17th century by a particular sect of Islam, which is being fomented by the Saudi Arabians with their oil trillions. And they're preaching this jihad, they're preaching this holy war, they're preaching this hatred for the West that is actually a stranger to the Islam that had evolved by the 9th century, by the way, which was getting along with most of the world. That's the amazing thing about what's going on today. And I don't think the dunces in Homeland Security who put out that edict saying you can't say Al-Qaeda, you can't say Islam, I don't even think they even know history. Truthfully, I think they know nothing. They're suited only for the university. If they're writing stuff like that. That's why I say, look at the cultures and what they've given society. Every culture that came here, every culture gave something, whether it was a cuisine, whether it was a sense of humor, whether it was a way of looking at the world. And what are we going to get from this crop of haters that are being led into this country today? Tell me. You got gangs coming in that may as well be living in a jungle. The apocalypto people running around cutting people with razor blades. What are they going to give us? You're telling me they're going to evolve? You're telling me they're going to get married and have children and the children are going to become Americans? You people are out of your minds. Multiculturalism is a disaster for the United States of America. A total disaster. The only people who are pushing it are those who want slave labor. San Diego, Natalie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Hey, I wanted to call about gangs. I am so done with them. I actually live in Escondido, California, and everywhere I go, there's tagging. They destroy the schools in their own communities. And then most of them, we had this whole police thing going on. Most of them, turns out, well, I shouldn't say most, I'd say a large majority of them are illegals. They've been trying to apprehend them, send them back, and then there's all these people saying, oh, no, you're pro.
Oh, yeah, you're in the San Diego area filled with moronic, pot-smoking liberal idiots from you-know-where.
I know.
When their door is broken and they're raped on their front lawn, they'll understand what you're talking about. Thanks for the call. I don't even want to get worked up over this. It's going to take the National Guard to get them out of this country. That's what it's going to take. The problem is we don't have a leader to do it. We have leaders that are going to go in the other direction. They're liable to deport you out of your own country and bring in more of the apocalypto people. Now, why do I say the apocalypto people? Because Mel Gibson did a wonderful movie, Apocalypto. You have to see it to understand what I'm talking about. The culture that cut the heart out of living people and rolled them down, rolled the hearts down long pyramids. We're told to sit here, oh, all cultures are the same. All religions and all cultures are the same. Yeah, right. All the same. Bring them all in, yeah. From basket weavers are the same as those who created the hydrogen bomb. Exactly the same mind, the same mindset. Oh, yes, bring them all in. The basket weavers, the heart cutters, bring them all in. After all, we're an open country. We have to have open borders, according to George Soros. And if people are given a chance, they'll all become good Americans. So that's the problem with the world today. I don't know right now where you want to go. We got the news. Here's a little news story for you. Remember I told you the other day that the reason guys like me were not permitted to enter the university, even though we worked to become professors? And I'm not complaining. I've done much better than I would have as a mere old professor. God bless professors, but I don't know how they could survive in the climate today. And pardon me, I told you the reason they kept men like me out after earning our degrees was they wanted the dummies in there in order to get away with staying on until they were 70 as consultants. Remember I told you that just yesterday? That they didn't want young guys like me nipping at their heels to say, you can't do that. It's illegal. So they put dummies in. And consequently, some of them are still there at age 85 collecting a full salary. You didn't think I was telling you the truth. I'm not going to take a break. I'm going to run right through it. So today I wake up. I pick up the local newspaper. Actually, I go to the internet here. University of California defends $2.1 million deal for police chief. I said, what? Now, it's exactly what I was telling you. UC Berkeley officials are defending an unusual arrangement that allowed Police Chief Victoria Harrison to retire last year with a $2.1 million package and then return to the same job right away for more money. Now, notice it was a woman. You understand who runs the police at the universities today. You understand when I say mean face, clipped hair, you know, it's code words for certain. She's not exactly, let's say, Betty Crockett. No laws were broken, said Cal spokesmouth Marie Feld. That's very clear. Is it very clear, Marie Feld? You sure? And then UC spokesmouth Paul Schwartz said the retirement package was consistent with university policy. The two are reacting to a Contra Costa Times story published Thursday that said the chief of the UC Berkeley Police Department received improper perks. Well, you got to listen to this story. Now, say here's a woman who retires, police chief. She gets $2.1 million in retirement. Then she returns to the same job right away for more money. You hear this? Now, here's what she says. She says, I'm now 54. I think I've got a few good years left in me, and I want to continue to contribute to the big U. You got to contribute. We need your contributions, yeah. Don't you love, whenever I hear a politician saying they want to contribute, I try to call the FBI, but no one's home. Harrison started her career at UC Santa Barbara in 73 and came to Cal in 85. 5 years later, she took over as chief. I wonder how she became chief in 5 years. Could it be because she was a woman of a certain persuasion, and she was passed over they passed over men, let's say, with military backgrounds who are much stronger, much quicker, and much braver than her? Could it be because she was a woman of a certain persuasion that in only 5 years this woman was made police chief? Well, I don't have the answer to that. I have only suspicions. In June of 07, however, this brave police chief found herself in a quandary. She'd been eligible for full retirement for more than a year with a pension that would have paid her as much as she was earning by working. Don't you love that? Pension that would have paid her as much as she was working. Don't you love that? She said, I was at 100% of my salary. People kept asking me, when are you going to retire? They were telling me I was crazy. And I was told that a job at another municipal police department was mine. Of course, white males need not apply. If you're a woman of a certain persuasion, you apply for the California Highway Patrol, for example, and you jump over white men who fought in Iraq. Because, well, that's just the way it is, women of a certain persuasion. So she got a $2.1 million lump sum from the retirement plan. She's also, on top of that, going to receive a $4,621 a month pension for 10 years from a deferred compensation plan. But wait, it gets better. Before her retirement, Chief Harrison was earning a base salary of $161,000. And it goes on and on. Her total compensation had amounted to $205,000 a year. Under the terms of the now she gets rehired after retiring. And so you can't believe she's going to be making $194,000 a year. She says, when I leave, though, I'll have to be self-insured. If I don't do a good job investing all that money, I could be out on the street with a tin cup. I did a lot of soul searching about whether I was willing to take that risk. She must think she's giving a speech before a bunch of geldings at the university. So this is the story today. Now, she insists that no federal rules were broken. Although the IRS states that such discussion shouldn't take place before normal retirement age, she said no law was broken. And, of course, the spokesmouth, Schwartz, said that it was not broken at all. And now you read further in the story, it gets even worse. It gets even worse if you read on to this story, but it goes exactly to what I said. So she retires with $2.1 million, and now she comes back and takes a full-time job. And nobody knows. Well, she got around the law in a certain way. They read the law a certain way, and they figured out exactly how to do it. And that's how she did it. So, in other words, not only are they greedy, but they're hogs, these people at the universities. They block the next person from getting the job. They're not only taking out as much money as they can out of a system where they gouge the students on top of it all for tuition. These universities, by the way, are sitting on billions of dollars in endowments. And they're spending it on middle management pigs across the field, and they're gouging the students. If I was a regent at the university of anything, the first thing I would do is make sure tuition was free for qualified students who came from families that couldn't afford the university. And I would certainly make sure that universities would not hire people like this at that salary and let them be reemployed. But then again, it's only one man's opinion. I'll be right back. Savage.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
It is the Savage Nation. We're playing songs by request on the program. So we were just talking about the latest outrage from the University of California, a $2.1 million sweetheart deal, and then she returns to the same job as police chief. No laws are broken, said one of the spokesmouths. But I want to just finish this up. Listen to what another spokesmouth said by the name of Schwartz. He says, in this case, the University of California at Berkeley determined a full-time appointment was warranted given a range of campus safety issues confronting the campus, including tree-sitting protesters. I swear to God. So in other words, the only person who can handle the tree-sitting was the $2 million woman. They had to bring her back specifically to handle the tree-sitting protesters. She didn't want to keep working a job and not be paid. Everything was carefully and deliberately reviewed before the offer was made. Students find it very disturbing, especially in light of the fact that the recent University of California scandal in which millions of dollars in extra compensation and questionable perks were bestowed on top executives without disclosure to the regents or the public. A student says, the lesson for us as students dealing with tuition hikes is this. The university won't give us accountability. We've got to demand it. Yeah, good luck. One of the regents is Dianne Feinstein's husband. Maybe he'll help you. He's a very nice man, and he's very fair-minded. Maybe Richard Blum can help you with this problem. See what he thinks about a $2.1 million plum deal for the former police chief, Victoria Harrison, and then allows her to come back to the same job right away for more money. See if Mr. Blum can help you with that one. See if any laws were broken. Now on to the callers. Sacramento, Alex, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
So happy to talk to you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. What's on your mind today?
Quick question regarding nutrition. I'm trying to conceive, and I was just wondering if I should up my fish oils.
Oh, good for you. Good for you for even asking the question and not going to one of the quacks who tells you just to follow a balanced diet of cigarettes and alcohol and take pills. Yes. And I'm going to give you a free copy of Healing Children Naturally because I have a whole chapter called laying the nutritional groundwork, diet for prospective parents is on page 5. Now, 12% of American marriages are barren, and there is evidence that nutrition plays a role, and there's a diet to improve fertility that I have in the book. You're married or not?
Yes, I am.
Okay. First of all, your husband or your prospective father, the father of your children, should understand that semen counts can be improved via certain vitamins, B vitamins, vitamin E, and very little of it, by the way. And there's evidence, very good evidence, that for the man, the father should follow a multivitamin mineral formula, a vitamin B complex syrup, a concentrated form of vitamin E, wheat germ oil, and bioflavonoids. And it's not hard to find, by the way. I have a whole chart on that. But what about the mother? That's what you're asking. What should you eat? What should you not eat? What about coffee? Is caffeine dangerous? Well, let me tell you something. Page 7. Caffeine, for example, has been implicated in recent Soviet studies as a possible cause of genetic damage in infants whose fathers drank coffee before conception. Now, we don't know if that's a fact, but my suggestion is that the father limit or start to seriously limit nicotine and caffeine. Not because they're harmful for everybody, but, you know, pregnancy is a special time, and you want to get the best possible matrix for the growing, for the embryo and the fetus, right?
Yeah.
Now, on page 8, folk wisdom and folk foolishness, is intuition enough, I ask? Women used to get good advice from relatives. Some pregnant women eat clay, dirt, and ashes. Did you know about that? Did you know what that's called? I mean, that's crazy, but it used to be called pica. In a study, anthropologists reported that expectant mothers sometimes ate clay, starch, dirt, rocks, ashes, coral, charcoal, ice cubes, baking powder, matches, and matchboxes. Obviously, I'm telling you not to do that. The women claimed that their cravings represented a dietary need. The fact is, it's of course not true, but they were craving something that they were not getting from their diets, and that was the important thing. And so the old idea that the fetus is a parasite, which is what the medical profession used to look upon the fetus as, of course, has to be thrown out the window. And the first 8 weeks are a very critical time, and you should know that that's what you have to focus on. And the mother changes not only during conception, but during the first 3 months of pregnancy, the mother changes rather rapidly, and you have to watch your diet during each trimester. And I talk about mothers who lost their teeth in the third trimester because the baby was getting all the calcium and the mother was not consuming enough of it through foods. It's all in the book you're going to get, Healing Children Naturally. Stay on the line. I'll send you a free copy over the weekend.
Savage.
For months, I've been telling you that Barack Hussein Obama is trying to charm his way into the White House without giving us any information about his true intentions. Steve Saylor has written a piece in the American Conservative about who Obama may really be and about why his church is a bigger deal than most in the media would lead you to believe. Steve Saylor, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again. Always good to talk to you.
Give us some background on your article.
Well, what I'm writing about in the American Conservative is why the media completely missed for over a year this huge story about who Barack Obama, the Democratic presidential frontrunner, really is. All the information was already out there. A handful of reporters who had looked into the story had recognized that Obama's minister, his spiritual advisor, the man he cited over and over again, such as using the title of one of Reverend Wright's sermons as the title of his second bestseller, The Audacity of Hope, that Reverend Wright was a radical of the Black Liberation Theology School, which has ties to the liberation theology of Latin America, such as propounded by the Nicaraguan Sandinista revolutionaries and so forth. All of this was well known, and it just went nowhere in the media.
Well, why wasn't this brought up by the media earlier?
There's a number of reasons. First, although Obama's autobiography, his story of race and inheritance, is quite well written. Obama may well be the best prose stylist to run for president since Calvin Coolidge, Abraham Lincoln, I don't know who. Obama himself has chosen to typically write in a very complicated, kind of obfuscatory way, where it's hard to tease out exactly what he's meaning. He goes in for very long sentences. He's going for an effect where you just kind of feel, well, I'm not exactly sure what Mr. Obama's saying, but he seems like such a nice, sensitive, intelligent young man, so let's just make him president. He was at Harvard Law School when David Souter was nominated for the Supreme Court right after the collapse of the outspoken Robert Bork's nomination. And Souter was known as a stealth candidate who didn't leave much of a paper trail, and it was all very hard to tell where Souter stood on crucial issues of the day. And Souter zoomed right through the Senate hearings and is on the Supreme Court today. I suspect that Obama started to realize the advantage of not leaving a paper trail that could be reduced to sound bites. Mona Charon, the columnist, has said something quite perceptive about Dreams for My Father, that the leftism of the book is not articulated, it's just presumed. So if you read the entire 442 pages, which takes a long, long time because Obama's a slow writer to read, you end up understanding where he's coming from, which was quite far to the left, but you don't end up with many sound bites that you can point to and show somebody else who hasn't read the book. Now, in contrast, the Reverend Wright of the Trinity United Church of Christ on the south side of Chicago is the exact opposite. He's kind of an attentionaholic, a showman. He likes to get up there and talk about the U.S. of KKK and just really put out these great sound bites. They are representative of who Reverend Wright is. He's always been known to be on the far left, much to the left of the typical black church in the south side of Chicago.
So why did Obama pick this vile church?
In the 1980s, when he was a community organizer in Chicago, was constantly told by the many ministers that he worked with that he needed a church, that his agnosticism wasn't going over well with respectable citizens on the south side, that they expected, they didn't trust somebody who didn't go to church, so he better find himself a church. Now, he'd known dozens and dozens of black ministers, but he picked out specifically Reverend Wright because basically Reverend Wright represented the kind of radicalism that appealed to Obama. Obama was worried about Trinity was that it was too middle class and that didn't have enough street cred, but when he got there, he realized that the Reverend Wright shared his radical views about race and politics and made him feel very much, finally felt at home. Obama, who, although he campaigns on his Christian faith all the time, there doesn't seem to be much evidence that he has any kind of spiritual faith at all. Basically, he's used the Reverend Wright's church as sort of a prop and as a base. But, you know, he's been going there for 20 years, and he's donated probably more money to that church than to any other charity that he supported. He's constantly cited the Reverend Wright as his spiritual mentor. So when finally the media started showing clips from Wright's sermons, which Wright had, who had been selling from his website his DVDs, the public was pretty shocked because nobody had been telling us this. Obama has run, you know, a brilliant campaign, but it's basically a deceptive one. He's been running on his autobiography, the bare facts about him, and then letting people draw assumptions about the political implications of the fact that his father was black and his mother was white. Look, Obama isn't who you think he is. His closest advisors, the ones who really tap into who he feels he is in his heart, are way to the left, way to the black radical side. And you can probably include his wife, Michelle, in that list. But basically, people didn't pay much attention to the facts, and it took till March 13th or so, long after most of the primaries, before the media ever got onto the story. It's really a disgraceful example of media negligence. They just allow themselves to be manipulated by a brilliant politician's campaign and not raise obvious inconvenient facts.
Well, why do you think the mainstream media let themselves get fooled so badly? Is it because they agree with him?
Part of the reason is that the media tends to treat campaigns as if they're not expected to do any kind of independent research. If the opposing candidate doesn't make something an issue, then it just doesn't exist. Even though you constantly hear about how Hillary Clinton is so ruthless and will do anything to win, et cetera, she's actually run a very polite, tentative, cautious campaign against Obama. She didn't bring up Reverend Wright. She didn't bring up all sorts of problems with Obama's past, and the press took, you know, forever to actually dig all of this material up. There's lots more to come. There's plenty of more quotes from Wright's sermons. The basic question about Obama that the press has not answered, and Obama, who doesn't like tough questioning, he likes to make vast orations where his mellifluous prose kind of washes over everybody and kind of reassures people that we just ought to trust him, whatever he's saying, they can't quite tell. The big question about Obama is, who's in charge inside Obama? His kind of coolly calculating head or his rather passionate far-left heart? We just don't know. Nobody's really pushed the front runner to offer some evidence. He may well have changed over the years. If you look at his second book, it seems much less to the left than his first book, but he never explains at all why it might seem different. And he's also said that his first book, he stands by every word in it. He has a tremendous talent for telling people what they want to hear. He's very good at getting people to think that he agrees with them, that he understands them. We have this strange situation where the primaries are almost over, and yet we still don't know much about the Democratic frontrunner. The press has fallen down badly in this. They're terrified of being accused of race being racist. They haven't done their homework of reading Obama's long autobiography. It's just one of the great examples of media negligence in recent American history.
Steve Saylor, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks. I want to really express my appreciation for you having me on. So once again, thanks, Mike.
Savage. Do bopsy do, boom 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 boom.
Do bopsy do, boom 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 boom.
I'll always want you, because my heart is true. Come closer.
It is the Savage Nation. So, out of all the things I said today, the best idea I think of my own was that Obama would make an excellent ambassador right now. He's not ready for the presidency. He's too green. He just, you know, he just started out in politics, really. You know, pushed very far. He's been exposed to America. He's very diplomatic. He speaks very well. He needs a lot of time. You know, he's like a good wine needs time. He should be an ambassador. Now, you heard it first here. I totally think the man would make an excellent ambassador. That's not a put down. That's all. Here are some of the stories on MichaelSavage.com from the bottom up. Corpses kicked from crypt for condos. A Brooklyn church yesterday cleared out the remains of 211 corpses that had been buried for more than a century in an adjacent crypt to help pave the way for a controversial luxury condo complex. Here's another one. Al Gore ducks as backlash builds against biofuels. The campaign against climate change could be set back by the global food crisis as foreign populations turn against measures to use food crops as substitutes for fossil fuels. You know, you talk about unintended consequences. That's why rice is through the ceiling, corn is through the ceiling, wheat is through the ceiling. It's because so many crops were converted to biofuels. And the architect of that is none other than Al Gore, the coal man. Here's another story. Elderly man drives onto Miami International's runway. Great. UC Berkeley defends $2.1 million deal for police chief. I read that story to you. What a shocker that is. Of course, no laws are broken, because when it comes to university professors, there's no controversy because they don't permit controversy. If you raise your voice, they call one of the mean-faced, clipped-haired women with a baton, and they give you a good beating and arrest you for raising your voice. They're used to talking to each other behind closed doors. And, of course, if they had any dissent, they wouldn't be doing these things. They don't permit dissent because they're little mini communist cells. But they do it with a smile. The thing is that if they do it with a smile and politeness, why, then there's no conflict. But you try to criticize any of these people in the universities at one of their little clavens, which they call meetings, and you won't get too far. Pregnant bank teller shot during robbery loses twins. No comment. We won't say anything about that. Machete-wielding gas thief nearly severs man's arms. Machete-wielding man, angry that he spotted him stealing gas. Random strangers hunted and slashed with razors for gang initiations in Daytona Beach. Of course, we don't know who's doing it, but we know that the victims are all white, and we assume that the slashers are probably illegal immigrants trying to make their bones in America to show how tough they are. Am I rushing the judgment? Possibly. Am I right? Probably. Can anyone say it other than me? No, of course not. Only one man is allowed to have free speech in America, Michael Savage. You know, for that reason alone, you should respect the show. What if they pass a law that says free speech is not allowed in America except on the Savage Nation? Only he could say it. We need to have like one savage left in the country, sort of like in the book where, you remember the savages were put behind barbed wire? You remember that book? Does anyone, you remember that book? Of course you do. So I'm in that sense a national treasure. The last man in the United States of America permitted to tell the truth would be me on this radio show. You don't have to agree with it, but at least you know, you recognize the truth when you hear it. And that might be nice. That might be nice to hear, that no one is allowed to have free speech anymore. Look at what Bush just did. They changed the language. Don't call them jihadists. Don't use the word al-Qaeda. Don't use the word Islamic terrorism. Instead, say terrorist and terrorism. So perhaps they could say anyone who invented the phrase Islamofascism is an enemy of the state. And they could maybe deport me and make me a non-citizen. After all, we're becoming like the ex-Soviet Union. When I go to the next step and deport people who use phrases that the government finds offensive. WOR, New York. Peter, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, hello, Michael. I was thinking, why not have one night a week where you do literature, English literature, from Shakespeare to Savage?
Interesting. Well, I think working it in randomly would work better for me, because the minute I plan something like that, I'd be bored before it started. That's the problem. I don't like planning. I don't even like planning going to any, you know, like going out with anybody. I can't plan. I've always been too, you know, like whatever. Monterey, California. Dixon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael Savage, I'd like to compliment you and thank you for being on the radio. My small business, I've put aside the 3 hours every afternoon now to listen to you. I want to congratulate you that you are the only American professor of American history on radio today, 3 hours a day. Your history classes that you teach daily just by being on the radio are the best I've ever heard. You're an expert when it relates to the challenges our culture has today in the history of America, and you relate to all...
But Dixon, remember, the only hope that you can take from today is that when I read some writings from the 1700s, we saw the same thing going on then in England, when people thought that the youth were lower than them and that the society was declining. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly.
So at least we find out that maybe things are not as bad as we think if we look at them in context. And I really appreciate your understanding that I have to dip into history to know where we are. We don't know exactly where we are, but it's a black box. We're trying to find out where we are. Samuel Johnson, one of the great writers of that time, wrote, "Our supple tribes repress their patriot throats and ask no questions but the price of votes." He wrote that in the 1700s. It was under the vanity of human wishes, you know, the price of votes. So this has been going on a very long time, and I don't think we should rush to feel that it's all coming down and we're all going to die, you know, overnight. It's the time to think, and it's the time to remember that there have been other challenging times, not only in the United States of America, but in Europe itself. And that's why I read to you from Oliver Goldsmith, The Deserted Village, tonight. If you caught that, that was great. But again, I want to read to you what Samuel Johnson wrote in 1750, because it should give you some pause if you think that it's all going to you-know-where in a handbasket. He wrote in 1750, "Every old man complains of the growing depravity of the world, of the petulance and insolence of the rising generation. He recounts the decency and regularity of former times and celebrates the discipline and sobriety of the age in which his youth was passed. A happy age, which is now no more to be expected, since confusion has broken in upon the world and thrown down all the boundaries of civility and reverence." He wrote that in 1750. Of course, Samuel Johnson was unique, and no one's ever been as good as him. However, to show you that this kind of situation of flux and change disturbed previous generations should give you some sense that we can survive even the brigands and the dunces that are running things today, for example, because behind the brigands and the dunces, there are some brilliant, decent, patriotic men and women in the government. And they know that we often will get brigands and dunces, and they have to deal with it and fix the damage that they do. So let us just pray for the United States of America above all, because without it, all of us lose. That's all I can say. And so with cheerful wisdom and instructive mirth, I continue my monologue on the Savage Nation. The phone number here I won't give you. The website I've given you already, michaelsavage.com. And you don't need any more than that. I have time for one quick 30-second Savage Express call. Kansas City, Kevin, the heartland. Go ahead, please.
Well, thank you for the spotlight, Michael. I'm just thinking that this is a forum where I could share with other listeners of the Savage Nation just how I'm fed up with everything, the little things, the people taking up two parking spaces or cutting you off in traffic.
Oh, the lack of civility? Are you kidding me? You want to hear Mike? You want to get into pet peeves? It's people with disability placards in their front window who take up parking spots for the genuinely disabled, and they see you looking at them. Suddenly, they hold their back and limp out of the car when they know that you know they're full of you know what.
Or the parking spaces for the women who are, quote, expecting, and just because the gal had a hot date last night, she thinks that she can take that spot.
I didn't see that one. But in California, we have a lot of phonies with blue placards who are not really disabled, and a shame on them because there are really sick people who need those spots who can't find them. And that's what they were designed for. To me, I take their license away for 3 years and make them pull a rickshaw with someone who's handicapped in the rickshaw. This is the Savage Nation. Thanks for listening.
Savage.